Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and it is May 1st, 2018. It's a great day to be a communist. Well, maybe not so. In any event, it's time for Mickey Fulp's monthly major market review for April 2018. Well, Mickey, hey. Good to have you back on, and I know you're traveling, so we'll make allowances for audio quality, etc. You don't have your usual setup there, but we still managed to pull it off anyway.
Absolutely, Kerry, and I quite liked your joke about May Day. if there were any communists still around, I guess Venezuela is still trying to do that sort of thing, but it's going down the tubes quickly.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's horrible. The travesties, the crimes against humanity that are taking place in there, all because you're not allowed to have your own business or pursue your own economic interests. It always winds up the same. Sometimes you wonder about our markets, how legitimate they are, but still, we are a long ways from Venezuela.
Well, that's certainly true, and we'll look into the markets and show the listeners why. U.S. major markets are basically flat during the month, but with some pretty extreme daily volatility. That said, the Dow closed at 24,163, up 60 points on a month, 0.2%. S&P 500 up 7 points to close at 26,48. NASDAQ was basically flat, up 3 points, closed at 7,066. Russell 2000 had a very nice month, almost up 1%. And so that's a 2% gain over the last couple of months after it had really underperformed the market since the first couple of months of the Trump election. So perhaps we're seeing the tax cuts, the easing of regulation as a positive for a small business. We would certainly think that.
Yeah, and it doesn't appear there's any end in sight to the regulatory rollbacks. I mean, I don't know if you caught it, and it's a little off topic, but Mick Mulvaney, his budget director and also head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Right, Elizabeth Warren pet project.
Yeah, and he appeared before Congress, and they asked him questions, and he said, look, the way the law is written, I can just sit here and twiddle my thumbs. I don't have to answer any of your questions. And she sent him a list of 100 questions. And then she sent him a list of another 150. And I'm sure he took distinct pleasure in tossing them into the circular file and hoisting her on her own petard, as it were. So regulatory relief is here to stay as long as Trump is, in any event, which has to be a net positive for the economy and the markets.
Absolutely. Let's go on back to the rest of our market litany here. We've got the Toronto Stock Exchange, the big board, which bucked the trend this month, up 1.6%. And Kerry, I have no idea why that was. It was up steadily the entire month, perhaps because stocks in Canada were oversold, closed at 15,608, up 1.6%, with ongoing problems with the Canadian oil patch and industrial metals off for the month. This is a bit of a puzzler to me. But what's not a puzzler is the Toronto Venture Exchange. It lost another 1%, is now trading in the range that we saw during tax loss season in December, closed the month at 784, down an additional percent. I'm doing the math in my head. That index has lost over 8% this year. There's no interest. There are very low volumes and basically no bid. And with the summer doldrums coming and precious metals bouncing around depending on the U.S. dollar, the future, immediate future is not especially bright for that index. China despite strong economic numbers, it was very much hit by trade tariffs and talk of a trade war this past month. So the emerging market index lost about 10 points to close at 1164. And finally, the VIX was steadily dropping all month. We started the month in the low 20s, finished the month at a little less than 16. So the market volatility that we've seen over the previous couple of months has eased off a bit. And that really, I think, has to do with the fact that people have realized, or investors have realized, that Trump's bully pulpit about the trade war is just a negotiating ploy.
Yeah, totally. Part of the deal, taking international trade. And yeah, and it's been effective so far. No reason to think it won't be going on.
Yeah. And now it looks like there's some progress being made with North Korea. And that's good news, because it wasn't that far back, I think in July and August, when we saw no way that we were going to get out of this without going to war on the Korean Peninsula. So at least there's light at the end of that tunnel at this point.
Well, I will confess to never believing we were going to have a war, that this is all negotiating structure, negotiating ploys and strategy. And it certainly appears that way. And look, everything aside, and I know this isn't directly affecting the markets, but indirectly, it's definitely having an influence. When the guy who's portrayed as a wacko, a nut job, actually crosses the DMZ and visits them at Peace House, I think it's called, and signs in with a note of optimism, and like maybe the media just wasn't really portraying this guy accurately to some extent. He was a good whipping boy while they had him. But now I guess they're going to have to find somebody else. But maybe this is what's helping drive the dollar up recently.
Well, then the dollar has had quite a month. It was actually range bound for the first two-thirds of the month or something, between 89.5 and 90.5, which has been its usual range this year. But over the last 10 days, it's very, very much rallied. I think a lot of that has to do with weakness in the Eurozone, not only in the currency, which has been weak, but the economic news out of Europe has not been particularly good. And investors are realizing that their negative interest rate policy is not especially good for investors. So, and then also bear in mind that euro composes 57% or thereabouts of DXY, but the loonie had a very bad month too. It was down, it's now at 78 cents, so it lost more than 2 points on the month. And that has all to do, I think, with the difficulties in their oil patch. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to energy. 10-year bond, that certainly was positive for the U.S. dollar. It actually went above 3% for the first time in over 4 years before it settled back at month end to close at 2.95%, up nearly 8% from interest rates in March. And it dropped back last couple of days, I think, with the realization that the next Fed rate raise is probably not going to be in May, but in mid-June, especially with a Q1 GDP of the U.S. at 2.3%, which is not especially boisterous. Finally, and the world's favorite kleptocurrency, and I love that term that you coined, Kerry, showed continual volatility over the month.
Imagine that.
I think the low was 6,800. The high was 9,400 or 9,500. But it was up pretty much steadily all the month, closed at 92.44 for a 30% gain on the month. It's continued volatility. I don't see it ending. And, you know, it's increasingly difficult to mine a Bitcoin coin and approaching a non-factor. Basically, the miners can't make any money anymore due to the electricity costs of mining a Bitcoin. I think the break-even point now is something well above $6,000, depending on if, and higher than that, or if you're a place where you don't have cheap electricity.
Yep. Well, there's one entity we both know and love that's actually headquartered in Iceland. That's where they do their mining from. So they've got like virtually nearly free geothermal power. It's twofold, the electric demands of mining a Bitcoin. Number one is the raw processing power that's required, and they have these racks of computers that running off their graphics processor. And number two is these things put out a tremendous amount of heat, so you need unbelievable ventilation and AC, and that's where Iceland has got them both. And interesting dynamics there. Well, hey, it's settling down a bit. I mean, look, 6 months ago, it was going up 65-70% a month, and now it only goes up or down 30%. So
yeah,
maybe it's stabilizing.
The volatility in half.
Right? It's stabilizing. Hey, and one more comment about the 10-year, which I think is important to note. So it broke three. It went back under for the close of the month, but it's right. Only a couple of years ago, Mickey, that it was at 1.46, which I think was an all-time low, at least in modern economic history. You know, when was that? That was July of 16.
Yep.
It was at 1.46, so it's nearly doubled and doesn't seem to have had any impact upon the economy whatsoever. Maybe we'll start seeing real estate sales declining now to some extent because mortgage rates are going to hit that magical 5%.
Yeah,
maybe.
Maybe. But that's
not.
Still low historically, Gary. So
very, very. Yeah. So onward and upward to our metals.
Yeah, PM's precious metals have been off this month, basically due to the strong U.S. dollar. Gold closed down $10, 13.15, almost a percent loss over the month. Silver didn't lose very much, lost a nickel, closed at 16.30. But we should also bear in mind that it briefly surged above $17.
Correct.
I think it was
for 3 days,
about 10 days ago or so.
It lasted about 3 days.
Yeah, it did last about 3 days. And that was due to a short squeeze. And it got the silver bugs all in an uproar again. Here comes silver, but that lasted, as you said, about 3 days and dropped below $17 again. We should mention that the gold-silver ratio briefly dropped below 80, but is back above 80 again. And based on some work we did a couple of years ago, that happens about 7% of the time. So this gold-silver ratio remains unusual, but with no end in sight. Platinum was a big loser in precious metal space. Closed at 903, down almost 3% on the month. And palladium had quite a month of extremely volatile. It went from 900 in the early part of the month to a high of 1028, and it finished midway at 760. A lot of this surge in the mid month was driven by very strong auto sales in the U.S., but that quickly fell off. Let's talk about the platinum ratios right now, with platinum down once again. Platinum to gold ratio is now at an all-time low of 0.69, exceeding our previous all-time low of 2 or 3 months ago of 0.71. And the platinum to palladium ratio has now been below par for 8 months running. Is that a new paradigm we're faced with? That's could be. Rightly or wrongly, it's easy to say that platinum is oversold. It's undervalued with respect to the other precious metals.
Yeah. No question about it. That is a real interesting situation that we've been treating it as an anomaly for many years, but now it's the new norm.
It appears it could be. Finally, let's go on to copper. It again had quite a volatile month. Didn't move that much. It finished at 308, up almost 2% or 6 cents from its previous close. But if you look at a 30-day chart, it was as high as 316 and as low as 302. And on a daily pattern, it's been basically a sawtooth pattern until the last drop off here over the last few days. A very volatile market, was very much affected by the news and rumor on the trade war front. It's curious right now that it is a bit of a low season for copper, and it's in backwardation going about 3 months out, and that may just be an effect of seasonal patterns.
Yeah, interesting there. We always keep a close eye on Dr. Copper for obvious reasons. So now off to energy, and there we had some real movement. Unlike all the other markets besides Bitcoin, which doesn't count, you know, when you see oil prices drive up, well, you talk about it, but what the amount that they have in the past 2 months, something seems to be afoot.
Well, certainly, and WTI is up 11% over the last couple of months. Closed month at 68.57. It was briefly above $70. We haven't seen these sorts of numbers since November of 2014, when we were in the middle of the oil crash. Everything looks pretty good for oil. We are approaching a supply-demand balance with the OPEC and the Russian cuts, which they intend to continue, at least I think till the end of the year. This has caused U.S. Shale oil production to surge. We're now at an all-time high oil production. Bear in mind, this is oil only, does not include natural gas liquids and condensate, but at 10.6 million barrels a day, and it's going up week by week. I track the oil markets on a daily basis, but we do another program on a weekly review, and everything looks good. U.S. rigs are now above 1,000 for the first time in 2.5 years, something like that. The Brent to WTI spread, Brent closed the month at 75.17, also up 7%. But that market has surged, doing the numbers here, 14% over the last couple of months. The spread there, the ratio on Brent to WTI is 1.101, and that has led to record U.S. exports last week at 2.3 million barrels a day. We expect exports to continue to go up. So, the view from the oil patch, in particular, the U.S. Oil industry is quite positive. On the other hand, Canada has lost well over 200 drill rigs over the last couple of months. It's now something less than 90 rigs drilling in Canada. They have a trade war, if you will, going on between Alberta and British Columbia with this Trans Mountain pipeline.
Yeah.
And it's just a mess up there. They've got no capacity to run oil except by truck. They've exceeded their rail capacity. They have no pipeline capacity. So the future for Canadian oil, at least in the near to midterm, is not positive. Going on to Henry Hub, it has become very weather sensitive over the last couple of weeks. It closed at 276, up 12 cents over last month. But bear in mind, we're approaching a very low season for demand. And so if you are playing the gas market or you're selling natural gas, that's a tough row to hoe right now. Meanwhile, uranium was flat, no end in sight. It closed at 21.13 for this low spot price in the near to midterm. I don't see any catalysts on the horizon, and the supply glut continues in the uranium patch.
Okay. Well, one of these days, right? One of these days, Alex?
One of these days. And in that regard, I'll be appearing in New York actually a week from today, May 8th and 9th at Mines and Money New York. And they have requested that I give a keynote address on uranium. It will go up, but when, we just don't know.
Just a matter of time. Hey, just going back to the energy situation in the U.S., in addition to massive increases in oil production, the increase in natural gas liquids and condensates has also been startling. It's an equivalent of 5 to 6 million barrels a day.
Yes.
condensate being produced, which is the untold part of the energy picture in the U.S. And now the gas is starting to get exported because they're paying $10 to $15 in Europe and Asia. And here it is, Henry Hub, you know, hovering in these ridiculous like mid to high $2 range. It's the energy steal of the century.
Well, it certainly is, Kerry, and there was some significant news coming out on the natural gas liquids market. A year and a half ago, everybody was trying to get out of that business. It costs a lot of money to build these conversion plants.
Yes.
And the world was supposedly had a glut of liquid natural gas, and that has proven not to be true. During the month of April, the first big tanker, went through the Panama Canal carrying U.S. liquefied natural gas to Asia. And so that's open market up to U.S. gas producers. So there certainly is a lot of demand in Southeast Asia or Eastern Asia for liquefied natural gas. And it all looks good in the U.S. Oil and gas patch at this point.
Certainly does. Certainly does. So anything else on our ratios? You mentioned the fact that platinum to gold had hit an all-time low, but nothing else.
Well, and we've already talked about the platinum, palladium, and the gold to silver ratios.
Right.
I guess the only other thing we might mention in the ratio category would be that gold to WTI went below 20, finished the month at 19 and change. And we haven't seen it that low since the middle of the oil crash 3 years ago. You know, the normal paradigm would be something about 13, and with gold mucking around range bound between 1300 and 1360 and a surging oil market, I've heard consensus analysts of $75 oil by the end of the year. We expect that ratio to continue to drop.
Yeah. Hey, well, we got a ways to get to the seasonally positive precious metal season, gold season. So it could well drop before that point. Anyway, Mickey, just tell us where we find you these days.
Same place it's been for over 10 years now, mercenarygeologist.com achieved its 10th birthday On April 25th, about a week ago, and we can also be reached at Mercenary Geo Twitter feed with 62,000 followers.
All right. Excellent, Mickey. Well, hey, thanks so much for coming on. And hey, questions, comments, just write us kl@carrylutz.com. The website's financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Actually have got some apps coming out within the next week to 2 weeks. So if you're an FSN fan, community member, you'll be able to download the app for your iPhone or your Android, get notified immediately when a new episode is posted, and keep up on all your news without having to go to the website, which isn't really that mobile friendly. Anyway, Mickey, as always, been a pleasure, and we will talk to you again in a month.
All right. Likewise, Carrie, and thanks for the opportunity once again.